You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all-purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
In 2005, two brothers hit the road to chase demons and fight monsters. After 15 years, they made television history and built a community of dedicated and lasting fans. I'm Rob Benedict. I played God, a.k.a. Chuck Shirley.
And I'm Richard Speight Jr., and I played the Archangel Gabriel, a.k.a. the Trickster, a.k.a. Loki. And in later years, I stepped behind the camera to direct a bunch of episodes.
And though we've been involved with the series for years and multiple seasons, we never sat down and watched the entire show.
Until now. Rob and I are going episode by episode, watching each and every one. And we're diving in with the folks who made the show to bring you an insider's point of view and some great behind-the-scenes stories from the writers, producers, crew, and actors.
And along the road, we're becoming fans. We've heard you saying it for years, and we finally get what all the excitement is about.
We'll definitely be hitting on some spoilers, so you better be watching with us or look out.
This show holds up after all this time and deserves to be watched and rewatched. Thank you for joining our journey and listening to Supernatural Then and Now. Hey, everybody, it's Rob Benedict.
Richard Speight Jr. right here as well.
And we are back for Season 4, Episode 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lazarus.
Get Lazarus and Lilith get their own show? Lazarus and Lilith.
Lazarus Rising.
Oh, man.
Starting off with a bang. It's Season 4, guys. We made it. We made it to Season 4.
We did. And a lot of people said, oh, they won't, but we did. Ha ha.
Yeah. People said there's no way they're going to live through Season 3, but we did.
Fair
we
point.
Made it.
Yeah. Rob, why don't you do the thing that you do, which is when you do the thing that involves summarizing the entire episode right off the top of your head, pretty please.
I will. This is exciting. I can already feel it's going to be an epic season, an iconic season.
Well, no pressure. Now that you've jinxed it.
I can already feel, I know for a fact, because, you know, there are episodes that we haven't seen yet that must take place this season. You know what I mean? The one where Dean is scared of everything.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not. It could be season 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 or 12 or 13 or 14. Rob, you don't know. They could be from season 15.
All right, Debbie Downer. Well, I'm excited. I'm excited about it.
I'm not excited. I just don't know what season there's so many iconic episodes. I have no idea where they fall in the lineup. Like, do you know for sure that one's a season 4?
Yeah, I think it is.
Because it is?
It's early. Yeah, oh, cool. It's early. It's either 4 or 5. And then also, what's the one in black and white that's shot like an old movie? That's 4 or 5.
I don't know.
That's coming up. I know you're changing channels is in here, right?
Season 5.
5? See? There you go.
Yeah, I didn't work season 4.
Oh. Who else? Oh, we have me. Anybody? This thing on? Can you still hear me? Okay. All right. Here we go. So it's been 4 months since Dean died. He wakes up in his coffin, alive and 6 feet under.
Gross.
He emerges from the ground, confused.
That's my nightmare, by the way, waking up in a coffin like that. Ugh.
What I was surprised is how deftly he got out.
Well, you know, didn't want to be
in. They must have not packed in that dirt very, very well.
No.
He emerges from the ground, confused and disoriented. After making his way to Bobby's and proving that he is really Dean, he asks about Sam. Bobby explains that he hasn't seen Sam since they buried Dean's body. Sam doesn't want to be found. Dean tells Bobby that his gravesite looks like a bomb exploded.
That's weird.
Yeah. He also shows him the burn in the shape of a handprint on his arm.
Weird.
They both wonder what could have done that. Perhaps a demon? And Dean is able to track Sam to Pontiac, Illinois. And when Dean and Bobby arrive at Sam's motel room, a young woman answers the door. And she looks a lot like Jared's real-life wife. After they convince Sam that this is really Dean, Sam must convince them that he is as surprised as they are. He didn't make a deal with a demon to save Dean from hell. The three of them are eager to find the answer to how Dean was saved. Bobby says he knows a psychic, Pamela Barnes, who is nearby and might be able to help them out. Team travels to meet Pamela. She starts a seance to summon whatever might have saved Dean from hell. She reveals a name, Castiel. Mm. She tries to summon the entity, but gets a warning to back off. Suddenly, her eyes burn out of her face.
Ooh!
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. So, later that night, Sam and Dean are at a diner discussing the seance and the next steps. Suddenly, the waitress and other patrons of the diner reveal themselves to be demons. They are as confused as Sam and Dean about how Dean got out of hell. It's a bit of a standoff, and the boys leave. Later, Sam sneaks out of the motel room while Dean is asleep. He heads to the diner to question the demons. There, he is attacked by the waitress demon, but her eyes are burned out, just like the psychic's. She shouts at him that everyone will die. Sam uses evolved powers to exorcise the demon with only his mind. Then the woman from his motel room appears. It is revealed that she is Ruby, possessing a new body. And she looks a lot like Jared's real-life wife, Jenny.
Really? That's interesting. That's a coincidence.
It seems that they've been working together on Sam's powers. Meanwhile, Dean and Bobby summon the entity Castiel. They try to shoot him with rock salt and stab him with a knife, but the actions have no effect. Castiel reveals that he is an angel of the Lord. He saved Dean from hell at the command of God. God has work for him to do.
Ooh.
And by God, we mean me.
It's time for Rob and Rich Review.
So I love this episode. I'm so excited. I was really a geeky fanboy watching this.
Oh, yeah, man. You sure as shit were.
So many things. First of all, I'm like, oh, Tracy Dinwiddie.
Tracy Dinwiddie, right, popping up.
That's what she does.
Genevieve. Let's not forget Genevieve.
Genevieve Cortese. So I didn't know Dean died at the end of season three. So I'm still in shock from that. Right. So then he wakes up in a coffin. I have no idea. All this is new.
Yeah, real new and real creepy.
He gets out of the coffin.
Pop.
And then I'm like, he must be in some weird, different universe.
Yeah, it's going to be some other plane, some other, like, you know,
right.
Level.
Right. And he goes to that gas station. I don't know what's going on. And then really not until Bobby sort of, like, has the realization that it's really Dean. Do I have the realization that it's really Dean? And Dean and Bobby are interacting, and Dean's alive.
Yeah.
Anyway, the whole thing, it was wild to me.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, without Bobby proving his Dean, even you don't believe his Dean.
What did you think, smartass?
Same thing. I actually thought that it was interesting to see Dinwiddie. You know, again, Robbie and I have known these people for decades and seen, like, I've seen that picture of her burnt out eyes, like, that moment has been in poster form and in picture form.
Really? I've never seen that before.
Oh, yeah. And, like, so just to see that, the origin story of that is super cool. I mean, when I started doing conventions, she was doing them. Like, I think we started at the same time. So I met her.
Right.
One of the first people
I met. I've actually never met her.
What?
But she,
not even in Rome?
We weren't there together. Oh. She was there at the first Rome, and I wasn't in the first Rome. And then she came back? She must come
back.
Yeah,
she comes back. I don't remember how many times, but she does come back.
Does she ever have her eyes back?
I don't recall. I confuse her conventions with her on the show. It's been too many years. I don't remember.
Right.
But it is neat to see the origin story. I mean, look, the Castiel origin story is massive. That shot is literally...
Yeah.
It's such a great iconic shot. It's so clever and creative the way they had him enter the room. It's so well done. The visual effect of the wings. I'd never seen anything like that at the time. Because I've seen this episode before. This is one of the few I've seen. And it was just so well done. It was so high... I'm going to say high tech, but that's the wrong word for it. High cinema. You know, it just looked great.
Yeah, exactly. It was cinematically, it shot so well, and directed by Kim Manners, and written by Eric. Both the last episode of season three and the first episode of four are that team. And again, I didn't know exactly how that played out. I thought he walked in and he showed his wings right away, so I didn't realize sort of how that all played out.
And that at first we think it's a bad person or, you know, a demon or something. That reveal is amazing. It was fun to see Genevieve. You know, this is obviously where they started falling in love with each other in real life.
Where the magic happens.
Yeah. Fun to see her. So she's Ruby now.
Right.
And that's who we saw Katie Cassidy was, right? So that's it's just fun to put all these puzzle pieces together because I know bits and pieces of it, but it's just fun to see it all together. So,
yeah, 100%. I agree. I totally agree. I mean, to see if you just count those three things, it's massive. Cassiel,
yeah.
Genevieve is Ruby, who's been a long-term friend of ours, and then Tracy Dinwiddie as Pamela is pretty images and characters that were heavily involved early on, and now you know this is where they started.
Yeah, as a viewer and a fan, I couldn't wait to get to this point because I know what the show's really taken off. Right. I know these next two seasons are. Everyone says that there's some of the best episodes in here, and so I'm just really excited about it. But the other thing is this the first time that Bobby says family don't end with blood?
It must be
because
it must be.
He says that in this episode, and I'm like, oh my god, that's he said that line. Right. That's a big one.
That's a big catchphrase.
And really, Bobby being Bobby, he's really solidified himself as a family member.
Yeah, he's really coming into they established at the end of three that he's the patriarch or the father figure, if you will. Mm-hmm. And now I think that's settling into being the norm.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
I loved it. I thought it was a great episode. I love the twist. That we're dealing now with heaven and hell. We're the boys are kind of have moved on, and they've opened the universe a little bit for us, and that was fun.
Let's go into facial hair, shall we?
I'm gonna give it the full the 80s Kenny Loggins.
Kenny Loggins, big bushy Kenny Loggins. Well, it'll surprise no one when I go with the giant, beautifully maintained Chris Stapleton. Because this, you can't, I mean, it's the introduction of Cassiel alone gets it to Stapleton. You know what I mean?
100%.
But then you get the other characters and the great storyline and sort of the beginning of a new whole chapter for the show that is so powerful about the angels and demon, time-honored battle there. So, yes, I mean, it's a classic.
It is a classic, and I just loved every bit of it. And really, the writing's so good, and just really terrific. And I can't say enough what a fanboy I am at this point watching it.
Agreed.
Super excited.
Agreed.
Well, everybody listening to this episode knows who our guest is.
I don't.
Oh, right. All right. So I'm going to let you know, Rich. It's a young man, young up-and-comer who played the role of Cassiel, starting with this episode and then on through to the end. It's Mr. Misha Collins.
Hi.
Hi, buddy.
Thank you for... I love that you're accurately describing me as an up-and-comer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it implies that I might have some sort of a future, and that I think is generous, and I really appreciate it.
Well, you know,
because I have to say, washed up is like that implies that there has been some past success, and that's almost too generous,
right?
Too. Do you know what I mean? So it's like you have to find the sweet spot.
Yeah,
that's the thing. We don't want to oversell your contributions to entertainment.
Well, right, which would be hard to do.
Right.
Well, I'm saying if we said washed up, it would imply that you had an impact.
Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Previous.
I feel like contradictions, contributions is a, that's a big word, an entertainment.
Throwing around in this context.
So we're watching this show in context, and your introduction, I thought that I knew it, but I really didn't. I knew, I'd seen the shot of you with the wings behind you.
Yeah.
But I'd never really watched you say, you know, raise you from perdition. And I'd never really seen it in context. So I was blown away as a viewer of the show. First of all, how young you look. You're just so young.
That's pre-work done, Misha.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's definitely
with your old nose and your God-given cheeks. I was really blown away by it, and I can see why, you know.
Mostly
by how young you
are. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. But just to see it all in context,
it's just incredible to see you with that vitality and
the lust for life.
It was right before the weight of the world crushed your spirit, and it was refreshing to see you standing upright like that.
But it's such a cool, now it's such an iconic moment for Supernatural, and I really felt like, Ruth came in while I was watching the episode. She's like, oh, Misha, he's so young. And I was like, shh. Now I got to rewind. I rewound. I was really crabby with her. I was because I was really into it. Do you remember what the audition process was like?
Yeah, I do.
All right. Thank you, everybody. It's been a great interview.
Can you let us know what that was like?
It was back in the days when you got, I guess I had a fax machine at this point. I think it was after the period when you had to drive to your agents to pick up the sides.
Yep.
Right.
But this was, they would fax you the sides, mm-hmm. and then you had the material for the audition. And it said that I was auditioning for the part of a demon. All the same dialogue. By the way, none of the dialogue was actual dialogue that ever showed up in the show. So it was all just it was a fake script.
Wow.
A scene written for an audition.
A scene written for an audition never intended to see the light of day because it was so shrouded in secrecy at this point.
Wow.
Because Eric Kripke at this point in his career, I don't know if you remember this, but he was suffering from delusions of grandeur at that point. And he thought that people actually cared what happened on Supernatural. He was treating it like it was a Marvel movie. You know, I was surprised that I didn't have to sign an NDA at the audition, but they really did send out fake sides, which I don't know that I had ever auditioned with fake material before.
Yeah.
I guess you wouldn't know unless you got the part. And this is right. The first part I ever got, but it was for Demon as well. So I was in the audition. It was with Robert Ulrich, the casting director, and Eric Kripke, and there was probably a couple other people in the room. I don't remember. I just blocked those faces out.
Sure.
And after one take on the scene, Eric was like, oh, all right, we'll give this guy a shot. Here's the thing. It's actually an angel, not a demon. Can you do it again? And I had come in. I'd never seen Supernatural because it looked dumb from the posters I'd seen on bus stops. So I did this very sinister seeming demon. And then he said, it's an angel. And it threw me. I was like, basically, I prepared for this.
Yeah.
And now you're saying do the opposite.
Yeah.
And I was like deer in the headlights, completely lost. And that was the character of Castiel was thus born.
Wow.
It was like, I don't know what's going on. What's happening here? And somehow
that translated
it translated into a very bizarre take on the character that I think somehow ended up working.
So now we know something about Misha Collins, fear reflex. When he's startled and thrown off guard, he goes monotone.
I go monotone and emotionless.
That's a fascinating though, that you went in there thinking you were a demon.
Right. Yeah. And I think I did like a raspy demon or grrr voice, which also I never actually let go of that. The white knuckled grip I had on that during the audition. So that also stopped.
Weren't you told at some point that all demons or all angels talked this way? And that's why you did that?
No, but I did read the script before. I actually don't remember if I was doing a weird voice or not in the audition, but I read the script, and in this episode, Lazarus Rising, if we're going to, you know, say the name of the episode right. in which I was introduced,
right.
episode 401.
Yes.
In the script, Castiel, before he takes a human form, is trying to communicate with Dean. And if you remember in that convenience store gas station, the windows get blown out.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And the television screen explodes or whatever. Like he's trying to communicate with Dean, but his voice is so powerful uh-huh. that it's breaking glass.
Right.
Even though it's, you know, a voice from another dimension, it doesn't really make sense. But I read that and I thought, oh, I'll try to do something like commanding with my voice when I translate into the human vessel form. As a nod to that commanding voice that came from, because my normal speaking voice is very high pitched. People often say that I sound like a human embodiment of a field mouse.
Yeah. So I remember when I first heard you talk, I was not, you were talking in a different room, and I thought that somebody had cornered a lost kitten.
Right.
And was like trying to go in here, buddy, you know, and the kitten would go, nah. And I opened the door and you were having a conversation.
The kitten was obviously speaking English to a certain extent.
I mean, right? Who am I to say what language kittens speak? You know, I'm not here to judge. Mm-hmm. It was so high pitched, though, that in my tinnitus, I couldn't hear most of it. You know?
Right. A lot of elderly people can't hear me speak.
Like you, Rich.
Did you say something?
That's why you went through that sort of gravelly voice that became Castiel's voice.
That's the justification I used for that voice.
Oh.
Just great.
Mostly, I just thought it would sound cool.
What kind of nightmare was it meeting Jared and Jensen the first time? Like, how did that go?
Is this a question that you use, that you ask every guest on the show?
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Did they like take you out to dinner? Was it like...
No, because I was not, I wasn't a significant, you know, I had originally... I was going to have a 3-episode arc.
Oh, wow.
And they had no inkling. You know, they don't even read the script that we're actually filming. So they didn't know that there was, you know, that this character was going to be back again. They treated me like garbage, like they treat all guests.
Yeah.
They didn't know that they were going to have to deal with me down the road.
Right.
Right.
So they weren't like laying any kind of foundation for a cordial relationship.
Right.
My first scene was with Jim Beaver and Jensen, and that they were both very approachable, very amenable and nice. But Jensen subsequently has shared the story that he saw my very bizarre interpretation of the character and thought, what the hell is he doing? Like, what's wrong with this guy? And obviously, you know, in the television, fast-paced, like hour-long television drama setting, it's very difficult and expensive to recast. Like, we never do recasting, but Jensen has shared that he was very hopeful that we could find a way to recast the character after that first introduction. I did I hadn't watched the show, as I mentioned, so I didn't match the tone with my character.
Right.
Right.
Of like what supernatural, luckily it was a new breed of supernatural character.
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of leeway about what you could do with an angel.
Yeah.
You know, how an angel might be actually a little bit more ethereal and a little different from demons, you know, are like just regular street thugs on supernatural for the most part. Mm-hmm. And that was the tone of the show, which I should have matched to a certain extent. So Kim Manners was directing. So I got to meet him. He was lovely. We shot a bit of that scene on my first day on set. There was that big introductory shot where
the lights are
like the barn doors open.
Yeah.
The lights are exploding.
Yeah.
There's the squibs exploding on my chest. That took an incredibly long time. And then we got a little bit into the dialogue on my first day on set. And then the next day we did something which I don't remember seeing happen on Supernatural subsequently. We reshot the bits of dialogue that I had.
What?
Because I guess the studio and network's take was that I'd shat the bed on those
no way.
On those bits of dialogue. So Kim's note to me was, we're gonna just play without again. He was very nice. He did try not to make me, you know, like have a panic attack about it. Because when you're, you know, when you're guest starring on a show, I or at least this is my experience, I'm always expecting to be fired.
Yeah, for sure.
When you're reshooting your material, for sure you think you're gonna be.
That doesn't bode well.
No.
That doesn't bode well at all. So he said, we're gonna do it again, but this time try to do it a little less spooky. That was my direction, which I thought was
oh my
really
god.
Helpful. You know, somewhere are those dailies. I'd love to see what you had done.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure was great, actually. I'm sure it was great. They overthink these things.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it was excellent.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Network execs are rarely wrong. I got to go with the execs on this one.
That's fascinating to hear that.
That's a trip, though, dude. That would leave you quaking in your boots. Like, okay, hey, we're gonna do it again. New day, and we have no time to do this, but we're gonna do it again
and be less spooky. Yeah. Oh, I was spooky.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
this time what we're going to do is we're going to have you not be on camera. We thought that might be an interesting way to do this scene. You're over
well,
there.
Well, the funny thing is, like, I did this, you know, my character was pretty weird. I remember talking to Phil Segrisha, and I said, you have any, like, I think he was directing maybe the second episode that I was in. He said, well, here's a tip for you. This guy hasn't been around humans for thousands of years. So he's looking at them like they're alien beings. So when you're talking to humans, you're dealing with a being that you don't even understand. You don't know how to relate to. And so I had that, like, fish out of water quality and all of, like, I'm sort of inspecting the humans that I'm talking to. And
that's a great note.
Also not... I'm not imbued with a lot of social skills or normal social graces as my character, because, like, he wouldn't have known that, I reasoned. And then we started adding other angels into the story, and they had all, like, picked up DVDs of the show and watched a few episodes and seen the supernatural characters on the show or just like regular folks. And so they, you know, Kurt Fuller, you know, was just like a regular
guy,
slightly boisterous, officious bureaucrat.
Right.
And and so also, even though I was the first angel, I established what the vocabulary of angels' personalities should be on the show. Everyone ignored that came after me. And that just served to make it look like there was something wrong with my angel. Like my angel is the one who doesn't have any social graces,
right.
But clearly also, like, in heaven, nobody liked him either because he's just not, he's just
weird.
He just doesn't fit.
He's weird.
He's just a weirdo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was cool.
Well, but and that's why you're so popular on the show, and you know, your unique character and a unique angel. You know, I think it worked. It served you well.
It worked. Like, where's Kurt Fuller? Is he in this interview?
No.
No. Well, he wasn't in this episode. You'll have him on when he does join the show.
Yeah, don't change the topic. He's not in this interview right now. He didn't make the cut.
What about your costume? Do you remember what the... Because that's, again, all these things we're talking about that stuck.
I assume, and you can tell me, I'm sure there's a backstory to it, but I assume they just went over to the abandoned, like the old costume factory, found the one that said Columbo, and just took that outfit and just gave it to you to save a few bucks, you know? You're about the same size as... The guy who played Columbo, whose name I forget. Uh-huh. Yes, am I right?
That's really nice. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Did the DC character Constantine come up when they...
Well, that was also in the script. So it said, it described my character in a rumpled suit with a trench coat, a la something, I'm paraphrasing, a la Constantine.
Oh, okay.
So it was straight up lifted. Like the look was straight up stolen from Constantine. The first fitting I went into, again, I thought I was just guest starring. I didn't care, you know?
Right.
So it was like, it didn't really fit at all, but I'm like, whatever, it doesn't matter. I'll be done.
Three
done
episodes
and gone in no time. Yeah. And then I remember 2 years later, I went back into the costumers wing of the studios where I, you know, never had occasion to set foot because I always wore the same thing.
Yeah.
And I always had, you know, my trench coat on over my suit, over my shirt. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be a pain, but none of this fits at all. And I took off the trench coat and showed them, like, the shirt that they had me in was at least 3 sizes too big. Like, I always, when I put the shirt on, I would have to tuck, like fold
and in the back.
In the back
to
tuck it in so that it didn't billow out.
Yeah, taper it.
It was all just like totally, totally ill-fitting. And they were like, what the hell? Misha, why didn't you tell? Why didn't you tell us? It's been 2 years. I didn't want to bother anybody. Didn't want to be a squeaky wheel, but it was pretty ill-fitting. And I would never have worn it if I thought that it was going to be the thing that I wore for years.
Right.
But it became, you know, again, like this... funnily enough, iconic thing.
Yeah.
I went into, it was Halloween and I was with my kids and we were in a pizza place and there was another family sitting at a table nearby and the kids, like the girl was dressed up as a witch and the boy was dressed up in a trench coat with a rumpled tie and like, anyway. So I went up to the table and I leaned over and I said, hey buddy, what are you dressed as? And the kid looked at his dad and the dad looked at me and started to stand up. Like, dude, get the back off. I mean, I was right in the kid's face.
Oh, no.
And the kid said, Constantine?
Oh, no.
And it was a humbling moment.
Oh, man. Oh, geez. That's like when someone I was at a restaurant the other night, and this woman sitting next to me, she's like, I'm sorry, I have to ask, how do I know you? And I'm like, oh, I'm an actor. She's like, oh, yeah? I was like, yeah, Supernatural, never seen it. And then you start naming your resume, and then I'm like, oh, fuck. It's like, no, he's kind of look like someone I know.
No.
What are you looking at, Rich? What are you looking at? You got a lot happening on your phone there? It looks like you're...
I see you.
Texting the whole time.
I'm looking at you. Look at Mr. looking at his phone.
Yeah, because we're taking a break.
We'll be right back.
You can sense it calling out to you.
New reality seeks you.
Join the journey to save Anomaly.
Place where sound is magic. The only way to enter the world is by looking inward.
Along the way, you'll learn potions, chants, and enchantments that will help you both in that reality and yours.
So, answer the call and let your campaign begin.
Featuring the voices of Ruth Conroll from Supernatural and Dead Boy Detectives.
There are ordeals ahead, yet with guidance, you will face them head on without fear.
Todd Stashwick from Star Trek Picard and 12 Monkeys.
When the time arrives, wherever your journey takes you, be there with no attachments.
And R&B singer NC Gray.
There are worlds, realms, dimensions, and realities beyond yours.
Anomaly is a role-playing meditation podcast that takes you into a world of magic and fantasy. You'll be invited to imagine yourself in scenarios such as learning to cast a tranquility spell or exploring a land vanquished by a dragon, but all connected by a shared mythology. The goal of guided fantasy role-playing meditations are to help you cultivate a sense of wonder, curiosity, balance, and joy in your inner world. Role-playing meditation is a form of escapism and relaxation, as well as a creative outlet for the imagination. The first campaign is an introduction to the world of Anomaly, its lands, magic, and secrets. In the 8 chapters, you'll stretch your imagination, learn to center yourself, offer forgiveness, find confidence, relieve stress, and stop racing thoughts. Your true self will emerge, allowing you to manage your goals and dreams without confusion, distrust, or self-doubt. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit seekanomaly.com to learn more. Anomaly spelled with an I-E, not a Y.
Seek Anomaly. Hear its magic.
Thanks for supporting Supernatural then and now. And now, back to the show.
And okay, so what about Kim Manners? What are other memories of him? Did you have conversations with him about the character?
Not really. No, I remember they drove me, when I first landed, my flight landed, they drove me out to the gas station that they were going to blow up. It was the day they were blowing up the gas station convenience store. And Kim was out there directing. And they just drove me out there to say hi to him, which I thought was very gracious. One of the things that I really liked about how Supernatural was run was this was a top-down, very welcoming environment that they created for guest stars.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really hard thing to, I don't know, in my experience anyway, guest starring has been really hard.
It's really
because
hard.
Because you're like, you're the new kid.
Yeah.
You're low on the totem pole, but a lot of your work really impacts the show too.
Yeah. You might be the hinge of the whole episode.
Right. And you can really screw it up.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of attention on you. People really don't want you to screw up. And guest stars, you know, for people listening who don't really understand the dynamics on set, for the most part, directors are also a little bit of a guest star. Mm-hmm. They're not part of the family, typically. Mm-hmm. Right. They're not part of the like regular cast and crew. So, and the top of the pyramid are the series regulars. So directors have to kind of figure out the politics of directing series regulars without actually pushing their buttons at all, because a series regular can be like, hey, I don't want that director coming. And that does it for you. So a lot of directors don't really do a lot of directing of series regulars, but they do a lot of directing on guest stars. Like guest stars get a lot of direction. And if you're a guest star and you don't really understand these dynamics, you see that the director keeps coming up to you and giving you notes, but not saying anything to the series regulars who you're in a scene with. Right. So what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And you come into this environment where series regulars can also be very dismissive. They can barely acknowledge you at times and just be like, you know, busy, like texting on their phones right up until the moment when they yell action. And you can just feel isolated and alienated and a little scared.
Oh, dude, that is a great description of it, because it's true. Everything you said is 100% true.
Yeah, it's interesting dynamics. And also, like, there's just a lot of pressure just being on camera for a television show. Like, just that on its own is enough to make you have some anxiety.
Especially when you're not doing it every day.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll give you one I like. When the series regular, who's already been called to you and basically ignored your very existence, after one take, leans over and gives you a note, which just screams, you're sucking, kid.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Like, hey, you know, there's a lot of tension here. The bomb's going to go off. So, you know, maybe process that. Let's go again. You're like, oh, the actor's giving you a note. Like, great. Yeah. He didn't say hello, but he's now concerned that I'm ruining everything.
Yeah. Cool.
Yep. I had that experience. I had a very famous star of a show tell me, this was not Supernatural, say, hey, buddy, do me a favor. When we go again, just say that line a little faster. It would help me out a lot. And then, like, condescendingly pats me on the arm. Like, thanks, buddy. Like, what did you just do?
Dude.
That's also considered a major faux pas.
Yeah,
It's a major violation of of actor etiquette. One actor to direct another.
Also, for an actor turned director, it's a bit annoying.
Oh, it's worse.
There's nothing worse than a director who was an actor.
Yeah.
Because they have this holier than thou attitude.
Yeah.
And they think they know better. And they also mistakenly think that they can communicate with you on your own terms in your own language, like that they get you or something like that. And you just want to say, no, you don't get me. And I wouldn't want to be gotten by you.
Yeah. Those who can't do teach. You know what I mean?
Right. And exactly. That's actually kind of the lowest of the low. I mentioned the pyramid, but there is a bottom of the barrel, and it is former actors who are now directing.
Yeah.
It's actually sad. It's actually sad when you see that, because it's funny to come back to a term we used earlier, washed up.
Yeah.
Doesn't say enough.
Failed.
By the way, quick tip of the cap. That was seamless. That was like, that was outstanding.
But but what you're saying is Supernatural for guest stars was not that way.
Yeah, they're very Supernatural welcoming. Was not, and it started when you landed at YVR at the airport in Vancouver, and the person picking you up presented you with this like really lovely 3-ring binder. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
And you got this binder, and it had like a guide to restaurants, a guide to like a map of downtown. Mm-hmm. Activities that you can do in your days off, like little orientation, a copy, like a fresh copy of the most recent draft of the script.
And a complete list of crew with phone numbers and everything back in the day.
Yeah, there was something about that that was just that little detail was really helpful.
Yep.
But then, you know, when I landed, I remember being driven directly from the airport out to set just to say, like, Kim Manners wants to meet you. So I went out there, drove out to the set, basically said, hi, happy to have you here. Really looking forward to our scene, you know, in a couple of days. If there's anything you want to talk about, you know, feel free to reach out. And just that sort of welcoming environment went a long way toward when we were on set and he said, we're going to reshoot your scene and try not to be so spooky. It made me feel a little bit safer,
yeah.
Which was, I think, really important. You know, it was those little details, I think, help a lot. And that show was really good about that. The crew, even like when you got on set, the crew was always really good about making you feel seen mm-hmm. and important
yep.
Without making you feel scared mm-hmm. or judged. Mm-hmm. And I loathe to say anything publicly that is complimentary of either Jared or Jensen, but I think that they were pretty good, generally speaking, about setting that tone for guest stars.
100%.
I agree.
And honestly, there were times like when all of us didn't show up as our best selves on set over the years. But in general, I think that the tone from the series regulars and producers on down was pretty welcoming to new actors on the set.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big, big credit to the show.
Big time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking to Bob Singer and he said, you know, season four was rough from a production standpoint. They were dealing with a lot, mostly Kim's passing, which they were all dealing with. And I arrived shortly after that. And I was saying to Bob, you know, I never knew that. I mean, someone, you know, mentioned that Kim had passed away, but you didn't feel it on set in terms of I was a guest in their house. And you didn't feel it that they were all struggling. You know, they were because they really put an emphasis on welcoming us.
Well, let me ask you a question, and I don't know the timeline here, but was Kim under the weather when he was directing this?
No, not. I don't think he was. Well, you know what? I don't know. He seemed fine to me, and I don't think he was aware of any kind of diagnosis at that point.
Oh, wow.
But I was never close to him, and you know, really, I only had that one scene with him.
Yeah,
and that was it. But I don't believe so. It was also a hard year. We had a not great line producer at that point.
Right, Bob mentioned that.
There wasn't a lot of whip cracking in terms of keeping the days short. So we were doing miserable long shoots of 14 hours all the time.
Wow.
And we were, you know, every Friday night was not, we would never done Friday night before 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. It was just every week. And there were a lot of exterior. We were doing a lot of exteriors at that point.
Right.
So it was very common to be like out in the horizontal rain at 4 o'clock in the morning in the winter in Vancouver. It was exhausting. It got a lot easier in season five because they kind of brought down the hammer. Like we're really going to try. Actually, I think we went to 16 still sometime in season four. Like they
16 hours?
I think they would occasionally let us go to those long, long days.
That's amazing. Just so people keep and track at home, an incredibly long day is 14 hours. To go 16 is like,
right. Wow. But they set that like that line in the sand after that. So starting in season five, it was like, we are not ever going past 14, no matter what. Like we have to pull the plug. And they kept to that at that point.
You mentioned earlier about the squibs going off when you're getting shot. You also get stabbed. You've got the wings. Had you done much stunt work before this or work with special effects like that?
A little bit. I mean, I'd done squibs before. The special effects stuff was pretty new, but I'd done a couple of things that involved special effects.
Did you know that the wings were going to be a special effect? As opposed to actual.
Yeah,
wings?
They explained that.
Okay.
They explained that. But it all ended up looking much cooler in the final product than I thought it was going
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
It looked incredible. Well,
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That was a really cool way of revealing those.
Yeah.
Really cool.
You know, it's such a funny thing what actors do. Because you spend all this time like thinking about character development and learning the nuance of your lines and all that. And then of course you get to set and like all of your energy ends up going into dealing with like, wait, where's my mark?
Right.
Where's the key light? Right. How am I supposed to talk to you when the camera's in front of your face and all of the technical things that go into actually shooting a scene. And that scene was a real trial by fire introduction because here I was like trying to introduce my character with whatever emoting he was going to bring to the table. But the first thing we shoot is like the barn doors open. I walk in. There's all of these explosions overhead. Sparks raining down. They wet my hair before the scene because they're like, you know, not going to be a thing. but it's possible that some of those sparks might still be a little hot. We don't want your hair to get singed. So we're going to just like spritz your hair so it gets, you know, moistened so you don't, your hair doesn't catch on fire. And I was like, oh my God, my hair could catch on fire. So like in my head, I'm like, okay, there's these things coming down, but actually it could catch me on fire. I didn't think there was going to be actual real fire.
Michael Jackson.
And then I'm supposed to not be phased by these gunshots, right? But for those who don't know, a squib, basically they put, when you see like someone's shirt explode and blood come out in a movie or a TV show, that's because they've put what's called a squib under your clothes and there is a little packet of blood in red corn syrup in there that also explodes. So the fabric actually explodes. And what causes that is a small charge of gunpowder, which is what they put in bullets.
Yeah.
So when that goes off, it's all wired electrically. There's like a little wire that sets the squibs off. And when that goes off, it sounds like a gunshot, but also it feels like you're getting like hit with something because there's that actual concussion on your skin.
It's like a firecracker.
And right. But my character is supposed to be like walking as if he's unfazed by that and just completely calm. And there's several squibs that go off. And I was just trying my hardest not to go like jump out of my skin because you know it's coming.
Yeah.
But when there's a gunshot goes off, your whole body just wants to like jolt, startle, react.
Yeah.
Which of course, in the first take, I did. I was like, ah, you know, because it's like a fucking explosion going on. And meanwhile, these sparks are coming down and there was moisture on my scalp and the little like burning cinders were coming down and I could hear them sizzling.
Oh my
it was like,
God.
And burning my scalp. Like, that hurts. And then there's these explosions and I'm startled. And so we did the first take. It took an hour to wire in all of these squibs and stuff. It was a big like operation to get set up. So they had like three cameras, maybe four cameras going. They really wanted to get it right the first time because it took so much time to set it up. And of course the first squib goes off and I jump like total startle and we have to reset
another hour.
And do the whole thing again.
Let me ask you this. Did they run through when you jumped and you were startled? Did they keep going with the whole take? Meaning like, were there other parts of that take that are usable?
Probably.
So they let you go all the way through the walk.
Yeah.
Were Jensen and Jim there? Or are you just sort of walking?
I would think I was there without Ben in that bit of the scene. Yeah. I don't remember. I don't think they were there. It was.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. It's a funny thing.
No wonder you had to go back in and redo your dialogue.
Right.
Wow.
But all of that stuff, like the knife, we had one of those telescoping blades.
Right.
With the little rabbit ears on it.
Uh-huh.
Little antennas.
Uh-huh. Yep. And the fight when you kind of turn and grab Jim, Bobby, and kind of like, and then do like this to his head. That was a whole choreographed move.
I remember you mentioned in the scene where I that first scene where I have like four suits.
Yeah.
Four trench coats.
What was the thing? Yeah. Isn't there something specific about the tie? It's just sort of undone.
The tie is like backwards.
Right.
The front bit of the tie is backwards and it's all screwed up. And it was actually because early on I was like tying my tie myself and I tied it wrong and it flipped around and then we shot a whole scene. It was backwards. And then we were like, well, I guess that's, let's just to say it's established that way.
Oh my God.
And so that became.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
Scholars years from now will try to figure out.
Yeah.
Why.
There were so many things like that were kind of like some weird accident or whatever. I remember you mentioned in the scene where I tapped my fingers on Bobby's forehead to make him pass out.
Yeah.
That established that gesture. And it wasn't like specifically scripted. We were just like sort of fishing around for the right thing to do. But then that became like this, you know, for the next 12 years, when I wanted to make somebody pass out, it's that. But it also ended up doubling as healing somebody.
Uh-huh.
And putting the palm of my hand is on someone's forehead ended up being exercising a demon.
Ah.
And putting my hand on a shoulder was for teleporting or time travel.
Huh.
And there were times when we would be in a scene trying to figure out, now, wait a minute, what is the... What do we do here? Is this like the fingers or the
right
palm? What do we want to do here? I remember being Like, we had the whole crew was trying to weigh in. Everybody's trying to figure out, what is it? And someone was like, you know what? It doesn't matter. Nobody's paying attention to this stuff. Just do whatever. And we ended up picking a like random gesture and out of a hat. And the fans were in an uproar. I can't remember what it was, but we got it wrong.
Yeah. It was actually a big deal. Everyone's paying attention.
Everyone's paying attention.
Kevin Parks must not have been on set that day.
Yeah, exactly.
Kevin Parks was on set. He was the one that said, no one cares. And the funny thing is, Kevin, I think that was just Kevin not be like in a rare lapse. Kevin didn't know the answer. And so because he didn't know the answer, he just asserted that nobody cares and it doesn't matter.
Wow.
That was his defense.
Right.
Misha, I remember when I started and I first met you, you were on your phone looking at this fun new website called Twitter, where you could actually see what fans were saying about the show and how the episode that had aired the night before, how it was received. Uh-huh. It was fascinating because this was a first for all of us. You were kind of explaining it to me. And so did you know, like, at what point did you know that your character was well-received, that people... you were getting a positive reaction, or did you?
I mean, in the very beginning, when I first got on the show, it was like LiveJournal and these other weird websites were the places where people were going to communicate about shows. Wow. After they had aired and try to figure out whether, you know, it was like these interesting sort of forums where people were discussing it. And I would go there and try to get a bead on mm-hmm. whether I had been well received in the episode or not. And it was out of just pure anxiety, like trying to see whether they'd be writing me back into the show or not.
Yeah.
And sort of toward the end of, or I don't know, maybe three quarters of the way through that of season four, I was like, well, people are really digging this and they keep bringing me back for more episodes.
Right.
This is great. And that's when I called Eric Kripke and said, hey, would you make me a series regular maybe for next year? And I felt like I had maybe enough, like I could see that there was maybe enough storyline coming down the pipe and maybe enough fan enthusiasm for the character to justify that. And to my amazement, he was like, yeah, all right.
Wow.
It was kind of great.
Wait, hold on. I've never heard this story. You called Eric Kripke out of the blue?
Uh-huh. And asked if he could make me a series regular. I mean, I made it. I was a little bit like playing my own agent at the time. I said, you know, it's pilot season and I'm getting pilot auditions and I would rather keep working on this show, but I kind of would have to not just be a guest star to say no to pilots at this point. So
smart.
What do you think? And he said, okay.
So you were a series regular then for season five.
Yeah.
Dude, that is, I don't want to skip over that. Just so people listening, no actor ever does that. That's impressive. Nobody ever calls the showrunner to go, hey, how about a bump? Like, you know, get me a contract. That's incredible. I can't believe you did that. And I can't believe you didn't go, you got some nerve, kid. F off. That's amazing.
Yeah. I think probably it threw Eric off balance a little bit and he was befuddled enough that he agreed.
Amazing.
Obviously.
But it was that, so that helped. Like, because of the way these contracts work, it's like if they pick you up for a season, they have to pay you for a season. So at the beginning of the season, then it's like, all right, well, they've paid for me now for the year. So they're probably not going to kill me until the end of the year,
right?
You know? So you have that stay of execution at least.
Yeah.
But I would, like, at the end of that first season, I was looking at the scripts, wondering if they're going to kill me off. And when they didn't, it's like an incredible sigh of relief. And then you go into contract renegotiations when the term of your contract is up. And there's that whole, that process again. So I never felt really solid beyond, like, this coming, you know, year, this coming season. Mm-hmm. That proved to be justified my anxiety when in season seven, actually it was the hiatus right before season seven, I hadn't yet gotten my like pickup letter for the next season. My contract, they had the option, of course, every mm-hmm. year they have the option to renew your contract or not. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't gotten that option pickup letter yet. And I, not out of anxiety, but I happened to be in Burbank and I just stopped by the writer's room and to say hi to everybody, because we don't really see the writers or producers up in Vancouver very much. And I went in and talked to Bob Singer and Sarah Gamble, and they said, and Sarah said, so we just want to let you know that we have a couple of episodes for you at the beginning of the season, but then then we are going to kill Cass off and he's not going to be back. And I was like, oh no. And that was it. I thought I was done. And then somewhere along the line in season 7, the network reached out to Sarah and Bob and said, hey, you're not permanently killing off that character, are you? Because it was a real fan favorite. And they were pressured into bringing me back. And once I got brought back, I felt like solid somehow. Mm-hmm. Then it felt like it's more up to me whether I want to stay on the show or not at that point. But that took a long time.
And then were you series regular again?
I was series regular again, and that was starting in season 8. So I think, or maybe I'm getting the seasons wrong, but I think that's
through until the end.
Yeah. I was in from that point on. So I had one season where I wasn't a regular. Mm-hmm. Well, season 4, I wasn't a regular. And then season whatever it was, mm-hmm. I wasn't a regular. Mm-hmm. And then from the time they brought me back, I felt like, okay,
you're part of it.
I'm safe.
Yeah.
I'm a part of the show.
Yeah. Until Rich killed you off in season 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, you write enough letters to the top brass, finally they'll listen.
Wow.
Fine, Rich, you have your way. Kill him off, they said.
You know, we've been honest that we really hadn't seen the show until now. You mentioned that when you had the audition, you hadn't seen the show. Have you gone back now and watched episodes before you came onto it?
Yeah. Ever seen the pilot and that kind of stuff?
I am loath to answer this question and embarrassed to admit I have not seen every episode of the show.
Yeah, that's okay. We haven't either.
What about the pilot? You see the pilot?
Of course.
Pilot's good.
Bloody Mary.
Yeah, I'd love one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mom.
By the way, I have like, you know, when fans ask questions about the show at conventions, like, remember episode whatever in season 35, mm-hmm. where you were and Dean were at the top of the pyramid trying to crack the code to open the gateway to heaven's anus? And I never have any idea what they're talking about. So even the episodes that I was in, I don't remember at all.
Yeah. By the way, Heaven's Anus is the name of my new punk group. We're pretty excited about. No, I know. Me, same. But yeah. Well, you should go back and watch at some point. It's really good.
Well, I am going to. So I'm actually saving it. I every once in a while, we try. Me and the kids try.
Right.
Because my son has watched. He watched all of Arrow and all of The Flash.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like, dude,
he'd love it.
The hell.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you? You ungrateful little brat. You should be watching my show.
Yeah.
But I want to watch it with both kids, and it's still a little too scary for my youngest.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting for like them to become inured enough to violence and, you know.
Yeah.
Say what, that Waldorf education ain't going to expedite that process.
Yeah,
you know,
I know.
What I'm saying?
Ugh, yeah.
Throw them to the little LA Unified Public School, bring them right up to speed.
So you're on a new show, Gotham Knights.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And can you tell us about how the first season of that wraps up?
Well, we basically over the course of the season, from my character's vantage point, we see me unravel and basically succumb to my own inner demons.
Oh no.
And I go from being this upstanding champion of justice in Gotham, the district attorney Harvey Dent, to
Two-Face.
Being Two-Face.
Wow.
Oh
yeah.
No.
So tell us real quick where people can watch Gotham Knights.
Gotham Knights in the U.S. can be seen on the CW at 9 p.m. on Tuesday nights. It is available the next day. So any given episode after it airs is available the next day on the CW app or on the CW website, which will be easy for people to watch recently aired episodes and to catch up on everything that has aired so far. And then internationally, it's available on HBO Max in a lot of territories. It's widely available around the world at this point and actually doing quite well internationally.
That's
great.
Which is good news.
That's awesome news.
It was a lot of fun. I was a little bit on the fence as to whether I wanted to do another series. I know that sounds like entitled, but I was kind of fishing around for what's going to be gratifying from a creative artistic standpoint. And I actually really loved working on that show, and it renewed my enthusiasm for being an actor, which was, I think, good lesson to learn. Nice takeaway.
Incredible.
So,
good.
I've had a very positive experience with it.
That's awesome. We're very,
awesome,
very
dude.
Happy for you.
Super. Thank you, guys.
Well, we will see you this weekend.
Nice seeing you.
This is Jensen stopping in to say hey and let you know that we've got to take a quick break. I'm about to pop.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hey there, thanks for listening. Now, back to the episode.
Well, that was great. So great to talk to Misha.
What a lively and verbose chap he is.
Yeah, and you know, like when we interviewed Jensen and Jared, Jeffrey Dean, you know, it's fun to ask them like how they came to the show and how it all began for them, because those aren't questions that I'd asked those guys before. It's interesting to see, you know?
Yeah, and he's had an interesting journey, Misha. As a human being on the planet, he's had an interesting journey. And then certainly his time in Supernatural, unexpectedly impactful.
That's true. It's very, very true. And now let's get into the mythology.
Mythology, 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 mythology.
So the name Castiel. At the time, the show was airing on Thursday nights, and Kripke Googled Angel of Thursday, and the name Castiel came up with no T.
Right, so he just threw a T in there to go, like, to do his own thing?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps. It's not said here, but Castiel translates into Shield of God. I'm assuming that's Italian. I don't know what language you're translating it from.
Let me try. Hold on. Let me try it out. A Castiel. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Could be Italian. Yeah.
You know, it could be Italian. It could be Hebrew. I'm going to go with Hebrew.
Okay, sure.
Because in Jewish lore, there are various spellings for Castiel. The mystical books of the Torah describe Castiel as one of the aides to Gabriel.
Hey, I'm Gabriel. You're my foot soldier. You're my man. You're my lackey. Get me something. Get me something spicy and hot. Bring me a coffee, Castiel.
Say that to Misha next time you see him.
I will.
He can also be known as the Angel of Tears and the Angel of Temperance.
Angel of Tears, that sounds like you.
I was going to say, that's what you call me.
Yeah. In some Western cultures and in literature, he's the angel over Saturn.
Aw.
Which is interesting because you're the angel over Uranus. However, other lore states he is the planet Jupiter or the moon. Basically, what we're getting at is Western cultures and literature had no effing idea. He right, could be right. Anything.
Well, they know he's not Uranus because that's all me.
No, that's all you. That's your area of expertise.
Even though we're already having fun, let's just sashay right into fun facts.
Fun facts.
The title of the episode is a reference to the story of Lazarus of Bethany. Lazarus of Bethany, who was raised from the dead by Jesus.
Lazarus of Bethany. That's a weird title.
Yeah. It just seems like such a modern name, yeah. You know?
It's like, it's really strange, right?
Yeah.
Lazarus, yeah. Which is very biblical, and yeah. Bethany, which sounds like the perkiest girl in your high school class.
Yeah, yeah.
Go figure.
Yeah.
The painting of the tiger in Sam's hotel room appeared inside Andy's van in the episode Simon Said.
Whoa.
Ooh.
What does that mean?
Budget cuts.
The show tried to hide the direction the season was going in when sides were put out for the episode to prevent spoilers. Ruby wasn't listed by name. It was described as a waitress who's a love interest of Sam's. And Castiel was listed as a demon.
Yeah, that Ruby certainly did become a love interest of Sam's.
Yeah, certainly.
The diner the demons take over is called Johnny Mac's Diner. Johnny Mac being one of the first ADs on Supernatural, Johnny MacArthur.
That's right. And when Dean tracks Sam's cell phone, he discovers that Sam is in Pontiac, Illinois. This is also the home of Jimmy Novak, Castiel's vessel.
Ooh.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Dean uses the silver knife to cut his arm to prove to Bobby that he is not a shapeshifter or a revenant. However, just a minute or two later, when Dean shows Bobby the handprint on his shoulder, the cut has vanished.
What?
Oh, that sounds like a makeup error. Continuity slip up.
Well, this is I love that we're able to talk about it. We're starting to get into the meat of the show. We really hit when Misha shows up, the show kind of takes on a whole new form, and I'm just happy we're there.
I know. It's funny because when Misha shows up to a party, it usually comes to a screeching halt. So it's interesting that his arrival on the show actually is a good thing.
Yeah.
That's unusual.
Well, and we also have a great podcast season coming up.
Oh, God, do we?
Well said.
Mick Jagger.
Well, all right. We'll see you at the next one, everyone.
Bye.
This episode of Supernatural featured Jared Padalecki, Jensen Ackles, and Misha Collins.
Lazarus Rising, or as Rob likes to say, Lazarus Rising, was written by Eric Kripke and directed by Kim Manners.
Guest stars included Jim Beaver, Genevieve Cortese, Padalecki, Misha Collins, and Tracy Dinwiddie.
The episode was edited by Tom McQuaid, music by Jay Gruska.
It was executive produced by Eric Kripke and Robert Singer.
It featured the following songs: You Shook Me All Night Long by AC/DC.
Fight Song by the Republic Tigers.
Vision by Jason Manns. Now we know why he's on the con circuit.
What? Completely missed that.
Yep.
Wrapped Around Your Finger by Martin Light.
I'm So Blue by Katie Thompson. I wish I knew where that song played in the show. Now, Vision track. Rob.
Yeah, we'll go back and watch it.
Yeah.
The episode originally aired on September 18th, 2008.
This episode of Supernatural Then and Now was hosted and executive produced by Richard Spate Jr. and Rob Benedict.
Produced by Stephen Hine. Written by Stephen Hine and Haida Holscher.
And edited and associate produced by Trey Booty.
What's up, Booty?
Music provided by Tim Wynn.
The episode was recorded with the help of Sonic Fuel Studios.
This podcast is from Story Mill Media.
Follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at SPN Then and Now.
And become a member of the podcast at www.patreon.com/SPN Then and Now. Or as Rob likes to say, patreon.com/SPN Then and Now. Mitts off your anus. That's Benedict territory. Oh, my God. Right. That was funny.
Are you ready? Have we got it together?
We were writing down options on how to introduce you.
Right.
My pitch was simply say a man who has appeared on television.
Right.
Misha Collins. To me, that's something I love. You know?
He's made great efforts at a career. I mean, which I think you can, that might be hyperbolic.
Yeah, man, it's hard. It's tricky. Yeah, now you know why. So we're watching this.
We should spend the whole interview unraveling this ball of wax. This is.
We're watching.
It seems like you've really got an agenda here. You're really trying to get us to talk about.
Rob's really cracking trying. The whip. Welcome to my hell. We see like, Dean's hell. Welcome to mine.
I want to be done with this because I have things to do. I have to get to Whole Foods later.
Storymill Media.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.